Swadishyam pratapan prano. Pahishcha pratapatyasau. Evam virajam pratapams. Tapatyanta bahi pumam. The sun illuminates both internally and externally by expanding its radiation. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by expanding his universal form, maintains everything in the creation, both internally and externally. Okay, we'll read the purport. The universal form of the Lord, or the impersonal feature of the Lord, known as the Brahma Jyoti, is clearly explained here and compared to the radiation of the sun. So you understand how the universal form of the Lord is the impersonal feature of the Lord?
That doesn't seem to call it the Brahma Jyoti. I call it Brahma Jyoti.
Anyway, I'm going to read on. I think we can get the sense of it. But the sense is that Vishnu expands the world through his energy. So rather than the personal form of the Lord, it's the energy of the Lord which you ascribe a personal conception to, because he's actually pervading everything. In the sense that Borijan mentioned yesterday in his tape, in the sense that the universe is his body, and that he enters into it and animates it. The sunshine may expand all of the universe, but the source of the sunshine, namely the sun planet or the deity known as Surya Narayan, is the basic of such radiation. Similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the basis of the impersonal Brahma Jyoti radiation, the impersonal feature of the Lord. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14:27. Brahmano hi pratishta. So the universal form of the Lord is the secondary imagination of the impersonal form of the Lord. But the primary form of the Lord is Shama Sundar, with two hands playing on his flute. 75% of the expansive radiation of the Lord is manifest in the spiritual sky, Tripad Vibhuti, and 25% of his personal radiation comprehends the entire expansion of the material universe. This is explained and stated in Bhagavad Gita 10:42. So that's the verse the Prabhupada always refers. And that's the verse that's the seed of the 11th chapter, which is the universal form. By a spark of my splendor, I pervade everything in the universe. So it's that concept that it's an expansion of the energy. The universe is an expansion of the energy of Vishnu. But at the same time, he remains aloof. So it's his impersonal representation in that sense. And that's why Prabhupada refers it to the Brahma Jyoti, because it's his impersonal representation. In the future, I really have to carry a Bhagavad Gita, because the references in Bhagavad Gita will really help to make this clear. Yeah, this is in the Bhagavad Gita 9:4, which Prabhupada had quoted previously in relationship to the concept that's happening here. By me and my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. You see, that verse is Mayatatam Idam Sarvam Jagat Avyakta Murtina. My Murti of Avyakta, my unmanifested form. Sarvam, all this universe, I pervade. But Avastita Aham Teshu Na, I am not situated. I am not situated. And that's the concept that's going to be discussed here. That he's pervading everything, but I'm not situated. And the purport Prabhupada explains that he is not conceived by material senses of it. One should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, I am everywhere and everything is me, but I'm still aloof. All manifestations exist are resting on the energy of the Lord. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies. He is present, he's everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. What? His personal representation? It's his representative, his energy. Just like the king, his representative is the government. Prabhupada says that here, for example, a king heads a government, which is the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. So it's his personal representation, his energies, it's his representation. But still he remains a person, which means he remains aloof. So if you want to get, you know, cone in on this, the verses in the first, it's nine, chapter 9, the first 7, 8, 10, 11 verses deal with Krishna's achintya beta beta tattva relationship in the material world, simultaneously one and different. 75% of the expansive radiation of the Lord is manifest in the spiritual sky. Okay. Let's read 10:42. For what is their need, Arjuna, for all this detailed knowledge? With a single fragment of myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. And that's what Prabhupada was quoting, actually, in that 9:4, the same point. He was quoting this. Vishtabhyaham idam kritsnam. I am pervading this entire universe by ekamsa, by one part. The Supreme Lord is represented through the entire material universe by entering all things as a super soul. The Lord here tells Arjuna that there's no point of understanding how things exist in separate objects. He should know that all things are existing due to Krishna's entering them as the super soul. And then in the 11th chapter, when they discuss the universal form, he says, O Supreme Form, though I see you before me, you're actually, as you have described, I wish to see how you have entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. So that's in relationship to saying, I've entered everything. I want to see that form. Show me that form. Have you entered into the universe? Okay. So here, the sun. Okay. Thus, the 75% expansion of his radiation is called his internal energy, whereas the 25% is called the external. The living entities are residing, who are residents of the spiritual as well as the material expansions, or his material energy, Tasta Shasti. And they are at liberty to live in either of the energies, external or internal. Those who live within the spiritual expansion of the Lord are called liberated souls, whereas the residents of the external expansion are called the conditioned souls. We can just make an estimate of the number of residents in the internal expansions in comparison with the number of residents in the external energy. We easily conclude the liberated souls are far more numerous than the conditioned souls. Anyway, he's pervading everything. And the example is given of the sun. So Krishna is personal, but the sun god is personal. And by the energies of the sun god, sunshine is spread all over. So Krishna is personal, and by his energies, he's spread all over. So mitasyaba
yasyesho martyam anam yarat yajat gat mahimaisha tato brahmam purushasya duratyaya.
Okay. The Supreme Personality of God is the controller of immortality and fearlessness. He is transcendental to death and the fruit of actions in the material world. O Narada, O Brahmana, it is therefore difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person.
plus, it's difficult to measure the glories, because by a spark of his splendor, he's pervading this whole universe, which is just described.
Now, my understanding here in these verses is, when the universal form is described, if you go back to verses 13 to 16, he describes Aham, myself, Bhavan, yourself, Bhava, Lord Shiva, Muniya, the sages, Sura, Asura, Naga, Nara, everything is covered by the universal time, although he is transcendental to all of them. He's transcendental to all of them. So here, the Supreme Lord's transcendental position is being explained. That he's eternally free from the material world, although he's expanded by his energies into it. This is also presented in that ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is expanding everything, he's controlling everything, but at the same time he's aloof and unaffected. So it's explaining Krishna's transcendental position here. And in these purports, Prabhupada is going to really discuss a verse discussed in the Padma Purana, where the spiritual world is explained in contrast to the material world. Because Krishna is pervading everything. He's non-different, but he's different. And now the difference is going to be explained between the material and the spiritual energy. Where before, the unity or the sameness is being explained. It's Krishna's energy. It's Krishna. Now the difference is going to be explained. And that it says, Saha, he, Krishna, is Ishaha, the controller of Amritaya, of deathlessness, of Vayasya, of fearlessness. This is going to be very, very interestingly explained, because the controller of immortality and fearlessness means the controller of immortality means Sandini Shakti, of the existential potency. And he's the controller of fearlessness means Samvid Shakti, because fear comes from ignorance. So he is the controller of immortality. He's transcendental. He's Atyagat, has transcended Martyam, dying. Anam, food of action, O Narada. And therefore, Tata, his Mahima, his glories, are Duratya. They're very difficult to understand. They're immeasurable. Because it's beyond this world. In other words, it's beyond the empiric analysis of this world. So it's very difficult. So Prabhupada discusses this in different ways from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Padma Purana. He describes in this universe, our one universe is like a mustard seed. Yeah, you know how small a mustard seed is? In a bag of mustard seeds. So you get, our whole universe is so insignificant. And if you take the whole material energy, it's insignificant compared to the Lord's spiritual energy. And Prabhupada says in this, and the planets in the spiritual sky, at least 300 times the number of those in the material sky. You can't compare. It's inconceivable, Krishna's glories. Because even one universe we cannot understand. And there are innumerable universes. And what to speak of the spiritual sky, which is a different energy and much more vast and much more opulent. So this is at Krishna's position. So then this verse just has this contrast. The planets in the spiritual world, they're spiritual. They transcended the modes. They're constituted of Vishuddha Sattva, unalloyed goodness only. The conception of spiritual bliss is fully present. Each planet is eternal, indestructible, and free from all kinds of inebrieties. They're self-illuminating. The inhabitants are liberated from birth, death, disease, and old age. They have full knowledge. They're godly. No hankerings. There's nothing there except service to the Supreme Lord. Those liberated souls are constantly engaged in singing songs in the Samaveda. Vedashangapada Pramopanishadai Gayantiyam Samagaha. All of them are personifications of the five Upanishads. Prabhupada describes this tripad vibhuti, 75% energy.
And he goes on. Pada vibhuti, mundane. Tripad vibhuti, eternal. And the whole verse is like that. And then, which is a very nice point that Prabhupada makes when he says that he's the controller of immortality, he's transcendental to death, etc. The Lord is not like the mundane masters who never enjoys equally with his subordinates. So if you're a master, you don't enjoy equally. But Krishna, the master, is so wonderful that he's immortal, others are immortal. He's blissful, others are immortal, aren't blissful. He shares his qualities in that way. The Supreme Lord is the leader of all living entities, can award all the qualities of his personality unto his devotees, including immortality and spiritual bliss. Anyway, it goes on and on about his qualities. And then the conclusion is therefore stated, dratya, in other words, spiritual happiness in the eternal kingdom of God cannot be imagined by great brahmacharis or sannyasis. You cannot imagine the happiness of the spiritual world because you can't even conceive the material world. And the spiritual world is so much greater. So these mahima, these glories are immeasurable. So now he's describing the Veda, the difference, how Krishna is different from this world after explaining the universal form. Now, keep in mind in the context of this conversation that what is this conversation? Brahma is answering Narada Muni's questions. So I think we should go back to Narada Muni's questions to get a sense of what's being answered here. Okay, so let's go to Lord Brahma's questions. Please tell me he wanted Atmagyan, Atmatattva, that directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the super soul. Basically, that's what he wanted, Sambandhagyan. Sambandhagyan has to do with Krishna's relationship with the material world and our relationship with Krishna. So he wanted to know the symptoms of this manifested world. What is its background? The same word is there, atishtanam. What is its background? And that same word was used several times here, I believe. That Krishna is situated on Krishna. What is its background? Trishtam, how is it created? Samstam, how is it conserved? Param, on whose control it is this being done? So these are the questions that are being asked. And the relationship of Lord Brahma to the material world. So this is what was being discussed. Okay, now let's go further. Padeshu sarva bhutani pumsastiti padavidu amritam shemanabhayam trimurdno dayamurdasu. The Supreme Personality of God, it is to be known as the supreme reservoir of all material opulences by the 1/4 of his energy in which the living entities exist. So he is known as the reservoir of all vibhutis, or opulences. Because it just discussed all Krishna's vibhutis. Remember, the first thing Prabhupada said he's discussing is opulences. So Krishna is the sthiti pada. He's the reservoir of all these vibhutis, which are just 1/4 of his energy. The same word is used here, padeshu. In 1/4. And all the living entities live in that 1/4 where these are manifest. Deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from anxieties of old age and disease exist in the kingdom of God, which is beyond the 3 higher planetary systems and beyond the material coverings. So the Ekpad Vibhuti was described in the material world, where Krishna is 1/4 of his vibhuti, or power, is there. I think it's a conceptual idea, not an exact mathematical formula. It's a conceptual idea. It means it's much less. So now he's discussing the material world in contrast to the tripod vibhuti. where the real vibhuti, the real power is. And what is that real power? That real power, again, is here, and Prabhupada discusses it so wonderfully. The real opulence is amritam, deathlessness, sandini shakti. This is the internal potency. And shaman, all happiness, that's the ladini shakti. And obayam, fearlessness, that's the sambit shakti. Because Prabhupada says, out of the total manifestations of the sandini energy of the Lord, 1/4 is displayed in the material world and 3/4 are displayed in the spiritual world. The Lord's energy is divided into 3 component parts, namely sandini, shambit, ladini. In other words, he is the full manifestation of existence, knowledge, and bliss. In the material world, such a sense of existence, knowledge, and pleasure is meagerly exhibited. And all living entities who are minute parts and parcels of the Lord are eligible to relish such consciousness of existence, knowledge, and bliss very minutely in the liberated stage. Whereas in the conditioned stage of material existence, they can hardly appreciate it at all. They hardly appreciate what is factual, existential, cognizable, and pure happiness of life. Factual, sandini. Existential, sandini. Cognizable is samvit. And pure happiness is ladini. The liberated souls who exist in far greater numerical strength than those souls in the material world can actually experience the potency, the above mentioned sandini, samvit, and ladini, shakti of the Lord, in the matter of deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from old age and disease. So Prabhupada makes it very clear what he's talking about here, that in the spiritual world, beyond these things exist beyond this 3 planetary systems. This Ekpad Vibhuti is the 3 planetary systems, the material world. Beyond that exists the full manifestation of these Shaktis. And therefore, because their absence in this material world, the absence of Samvit is fear. The absence of Sandini is death. The absence of Ananda is anxieties. So this is actually discussed here. And therefore Prabhupada discusses that there may be, yet even on these planets, he's talking about the material world, the great sages and saints are promoted beyond the heavenly planets to Mahalok. But that also is not the place of complete fearlessness, because at the end of one kalpa, the Maharlok is annihilated, and the inhabitants have to transport themselves still to high planets, higher planets. And even on those planets, no one is immune to death. There may be a comparative extension of life, expansions of knowledge, and a sense of full bliss. But factual deathlessness, fearlessness, and freedom from old age, diseases, etc., are possible only beyond the material spheres or the coverings of the material sky. Such things are situated on the head, Adhya Murtisu, Murdasu. Okay. Now it's going to discuss the Tripad Vibhuti, the spiritual world, where it's fully manifest.
Padastrayo vahishchasan aprajanam yarasrama antas trilokyas paparo prihamedho brihat vrta.
And how to get there? The spiritual world. The spiritual world. Now you see the word pada, traya, the 3 parts. The 3 parts, the spiritual world. The spiritual world, which consists of 3/4 of the Lord's energy, is situated beyond this material world. And it is especially meant for those who will never be reborn. Others who are attached to family life and who do not strictly follow celibacy vows must live within the 3 material worlds. So this is very interesting. The Bhagavatam is situated beyond the material and especially meant for those who will not die, who want immortality. Others who are attached, Grihamedi. Grihamedi means, again, the same thing, envy. Envy means competition. Competition means fruitive activity, working for yourself. To get ahead in the world. For what purpose? For that material objective. I want to be the enjoyer and controller. So you have to compete with others for that. That's what Grihamedi is. It means materialist. And the materialist, they do not follow vows of celibacy. And they must live within this world. Prabhupada is very heavy on these points. Prabhupada would be preaching now in ISKCON. Maybe they wouldn't like. Certainly. The highest benefit that can be awarded to a human being is to train him to be detached from sex life. Because it is only due to sex indulgence that conditioned life and material existence continues birth after birth. So the connection between sex life and the material world. Because what sex life is, it's the culmination of material desire. It's the intensification of the material consciousness that I am the joyer, I am the controller, I am the body. And therefore, therefore material enjoyment, if it's unrestricted, has to lead to sex life. Because that's the objective. And it's not just the sensual stimulation, but it's the mood that I am controlling. I am the enjoyer. So where there's no regulation of sex life, then there's complete absorption and entanglement in the bodily concept of life. Sex life means to be absorbed in the bodily concept of life. We discussed this many times. There's the soul and there's the body. They become one in the soul's conception due to the desire to be the enjoyer, which he cannot have by his constitution. So he has to think that the self, or who he is something else, which is the body. And this is all arranged by Krishna to facilitate our material desire. So that's what creates the material world. That's what puts us into the material world. It's that intense desire to enjoy. And the intensification of that desire, the sex life, unrestricted sex life, puts us in the bodily concept of life. And therefore, actually, it leads to suffering. Because what is our suffering? Our suffering is due to the identification with the body. Suffering is in matter. Because we're identifying with matter, we suffer. So if we intensify that identification, we suffer more. And that's why we describe why healthy and proper austerity and convenience for spiritual life makes one happy, because it detaches them from the bodily concept of life. Now, I had one experience. When I used to be in college, I used to be a football or soccer player. I was captain of my team in college. And I used to play with all foreigners. So Americans actually have a little bit higher sense of morality, believe it or not, than some of the people I was with. You know, their promiscuity. Remember, there was one boy from Haiti and one boy from Denmark, which were probably the two most promiscuous type countries or something. And, you know, they had so much sex life. But I, as soon as I came to Krishna consciousness, I took vows of celibacy, even in college. So I was in college for 4 years following celibacy. And everyone knew it. They knew that I was celibate. I was a vegetarian. I remember I could see so clearly how deep these people were suffering because of their intense absorption of the bodily concept of life, which includes the mind. So when the mind transforms and you're in the bodily concept of life, you experience the mind also. So I saw that they would like to associate with me, but because of the austerities I was performing, it was in a detachment from the body and the suffering was so much less. And I saw that even that they would recognize that and they would want to associate with me because of that suffering. So I immediately understood that the cause of their suffering is their unrestricted sex life, and therefore they're experiencing the transformations of the mind and body so intensely. I was seeing this. I had that realization. So, Prabhupada discusses this. I mean, there are 2 points. If brahmachari life is for students who are educated to follow celibacy, then it would be easier if they got proper training in brahmachari life. It would be easier to continue to the highest perfectional stage. That's an obvious fact. If it's done properly, proper brahmachari training, not fanatic brahmachari training, but proper training from the beginning, like you see in Chopati. You can see it's easier to continue to the highest perfectional stage. That's why you're attracted to staying there. And you can see that it's good for the brahmachari life. It makes it easy. And then a householder, if he has been trained in those principles, he also can more easily take sannyas. And then Prabhupada discusses Buddha, Shankara, Vaishnava in all. Not one of these processes allows the followers to break the vows of celibacy. Neither the Buddhists, neither the Mayavadis, and neither the Vaishnavas. And then this abrihad vrata, those who have broken the vows of celibacy, Prabhupada is so heavy. The householders and persons who have deliberately broken the vows of celibacy cannot enter the kingdom of deathlessness. It's very, very heavy. They can't enter into that kingdom. And then Prabhupada said, such fall down by the spirits may be compensated by another chance of human life in good families of learned Brahmins. You fall down, and you compensate in another life. But the best thing is to attain the highest perfection of deathlessness as soon as the human form of life is attained. Otherwise, the whole policy of human life will be proven to be a total failure. And then Prabhupada discusses Chota Haridas, who was severely punished. Because he was a renunciate and he took vows of celibacy. And that's the worst. And he begged some rice from an old woman, some the wrong way, or whatever the case is. He was so strict, Lord Chaitanya. For a transcendentalist, therefore, who at all wants to be promoted to the kingdom beyond material misery, it is worse than suicide to deliberately engage in sex life, especially in the renounced order of life. Sex life and the renounced order of life is the most pervaded form of religious life, and such a misguided person can only be saved if by chance he meets a pure devotee. So it's very strong. Sometimes we forget these things, the principles, because of fanaticism, the sannyas order, and because of deviance, the sannyas order and the brahmachari order have become denigrated. But it's nice. I mean, I saw it for some of those nice brahmacharis. Deva Mita, who was in Chopati, who came to Mayapur. When you see him, you look and you think, oh, celibacy, that's a very wonderful thing. You should be more determined. When you see if someone is, and that's what the sannyas order is supposed to be. It's supposed to be people who are happy in renunciation and live really simply. And when people see their bliss, then they think, yes, celibacy is a good thing. But if they see someone who's frustrated and cheating and living opulently, they think, look at him, he's just frustrated. We should have sex and not be frustrated. It's a good thing. So this is actually one of the purposes of the sannyas order. Striti vichikrame vishvam sashanasane ube. Yaru vidya cha vidya cha purushas tu bayasaya. By his energies, the all-pervading personality of God is thus comprehensively the master of in the activities of controlling and in devotional service. He is the ultimate master of both nescience and factual knowledge of all situations. So Krishna is the ultimate master.
He's the all-pervading personality, pervading everything, and he's the master of ube, of both sasana, activities of lording it over, anashine, activities in devotional service. Ube, for both, he's the ashraya, the shelter for avidya and vidya. So actually avidya is this controlling over the material world, and vidya is devotional service. So basically what he's saying, he's the controller of both the spiritual and material worlds. Because they discuss the ekpad vibhuti, and they discuss the tripad vibhuti, and Krishna is actually he's the controller of both. That's Krishna's position. The forgetfulness is specially manifest in the field of ekpad vibhuti of the Lord, or the material world, and the tripad vibhuti. There's no forgetfulness by the living entity. So the ignorance is the ekpad vibhuti, and the vidya or knowledge is the tripad vibhuti. So Prabhupada discusses that. In the field of nescience, activities are directed towards lording it over creation. This is what it says. So this nescience is just controlling. In the material world, everyone is engaged in acquiring material happiness to lord over the material world. But in the field of knowledge, that's, again, if you look at the verse, in the field of knowledge is bhakti. So vidya is bhakti. Therefore, there is no chance of being contaminated by the influence of nescience or vidya in the liberated stage of devotional activities. The Lord is thus the proprietor of both of the fields, both of nescience and of cognition, and it remains the choice of living entity exists in either above regions. So Krishna is controlling these. We have our minute independence. We can come to the material world or the spiritual world.
Yasmarandam viradyagye jagye utendriya gunatmaka tadravyam Atyagad Vishvam Gobi Surya Ivatpadam Ivatapan.
From the personality of Godhead, all the universal globes and the universal form with all material elements, qualities, and senses are generated. Yet he is aloof from such material manifestations like the sun, which is separate from its rays and heat. So again, this is, I think, you know, this is just a summary. The personality of Godhead, all the undam, the universes, the virat rupa, the universal form, with all its bhuta, its elements, its indriya, its senses, guna, the modes. From that personality of Godhead, all this is coming. And yet, Bhaktyagat, he surpasses all Vishvam, all this material universe, Tatravyam, the universe in the universal form. He surpasses matter, just like the sun, which is separated from the heat and the light. So again, it's a nice summary. And Prabhupada discusses this, how Krishna is aloof. It's a very interesting discussion. The ekpad vibhuti manifestation of the material energy of the Lord is just like one of the many mistresses of the Lord, by whom the Lord is not so much attracted as indicated in the language of the Gita, bina prakriti. The prakriti is the female or material energy, and bina means separated. It's like a divorce. You know, you have a relationship, but you're separated. But the region of the tripad vibhuti, being a pure spiritual manifestation of the energy of the Lord, is, so to speak, more attractive to him. The Lord therefore generates the material manifestations by impregnating the material energy, and then within the manifestation he expands himself as the gigantic form of the Vishwarup. The Vishwarup, as it was shown, is not the original form, because he's separated from this. It's a separated energy. The original form is the transcendental form of Purushottam, or Krishna himself. It is nicely explained here in that he expands himself just like the sun. The sun expands itself by its terrible heat and rays, yet the sun is always aloof. The impersonalists take into consideration the rays without information of the tangible, transcendental, eternal form of the Lord known as Krishna. So he's aloof from this material energy. He's aloof, and that's not his original form. He's existing in the spiritual world. And then the verse from Brahma Samhita is given. Ananda Chinmaya Rasi Pratibhavita Bhis. The Supreme Personality of Govinda, the one who enlivens the senses of everyone by his personal bodily rays, resides in his transcendental abode called Goloka. Yet he is present in every nook and corner of his creation by expansion of happy spiritual rays equal in power to his personal potency of bliss. He is therefore simultaneously personal and personal by his inconceivable potency, or he is the one without a second display. He is separate and still there is nothing different. So again, a Chintyabheda Veda Tattva. Krishna is a Chintyabheda Veda Tattva. Now, the next verses that come up are going to be answering the next question that Brahma asked. And that is, he asked, how is the material universe sustained? Right? That question was there. So now he's going to describe sacrifice. Because the material universes are sustained by sacrifice. But in describing sacrifice, he's also going to explain how Krishna is the source of everything. There's some note. Maybe this is from Borijan. It said, if all the objects of creation are included in the Purusha, then there being no difference between the sacrifice and its requisites, then the adoration of the great being cannot be accomplished by such sacrifice. This verse, in other words, if everything is coming from Krishna, then how do you perform sacrifice? Because everything belongs to him. And at the same time, if it's not of his energy, if it doesn't belong to him, then how do you perform sacrifice? Because then it'd be different. So this anyway explains the process of sacrifice. When I was born from the indomitable flower of the Lord, Mahavishnu, the great person, I had no ingredients for sacrificial performances except the bodily limbs of the great personality of Godhead. So it's created from the Supreme Lord. And we worship the Lord with what comes from him. Okay, so we'll end today and we'll continue tomorrow. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.